Welcome to the Gospel Rain podcast, part of the teaching ministry of Dr. Matt Brown and Dr. Micah Carter. We hope you will find gospel-centered answers to your questions about theology and the Christian life. And now, we welcome you to the Gospel Rain conversation.
We want to welcome you back to the Gospel Rain podcast. I'm sitting with Matt, and we're excited to be behind the microphones again today talking about gospel-centered things in life and ministry. And it's a special episode for us today, partially because of the events in our culture that have led us to this moment. And we're going to be talking today specifically about the legacy of Dr. Billy Graham. And many tributes will be given to him. Some really good tributes have already been given. There's a lot to come, and you'll be seeing some of these in national media, no doubt, down the road as Dr. Graham has memorial services here and there that are to come. This episode is unique for us as well. We have a guest joining us today, Matt, by the name of Dr. Adam Greenway. Adam's been with us before on a podcast on evangelism. Excellent podcast, one of our most listened to podcasts, incidentally, Adam. And so we welcome you back. And I just want to give you a little information about Adam. He's the dean of the Billy Graham School of Missions, Evangelism, and Ministry at the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary in Louisville, Kentucky. Adam, this is the only school that bears Billy Graham's name. Is that correct?
That is correct. So yeah, we have the fortunate honor of having many schools wanted to carry his name, but we are the only graduate school he ever endorsed with his own name. And that is a legacy and an honor that we take very seriously here at Southern Seminary.
And Southern Seminary's president, Dr. Al Mohler, he's given a really great tribute on the podcast he does called The Briefing for Dr. Billy Graham. I think that was last Thursday.
I think that's right.
Thursday, February 22nd. We would encourage our listeners to go back and hear Dr. Mohler's podcast. Now, what's interesting is one of the things he said about Dr. Billy Graham was when Dr. Mohler was being installed as the president of Southern Seminary, he needed Billy Graham there for a number of reasons for him to come. And Dr. Graham graciously came, gave a wonderful message, you get from that, and not just his preaching, you see the Crusades and everything, but you get from stuff like that how passionate and frankly courageous someone like Billy Graham was. In many contexts, he would say things that you're sitting there thinking, oh my goodness, did he really just lob that across the bow? But he did, and he did in that inaugural address for Dr. Mohler too. I thought that was fascinating.
No, I think that's fair, and I think especially given what Billy Graham represented in terms of his massive influence, not just worldwide, but especially within the Southern Baptist Convention, his coming to endorse Dr. Mohler's election as president 25 years ago, to preach his inauguration, and to publicly endorse the vision to establish the first graduate school for Great Commission Studies, and to endorse it with his own name, there's a massive depth of gratitude I know that Dr. Mohler felt toward Dr. Graham. And certainly, we've done everything we can to continue to promote Dr. Graham's legacy and ministry.
Adam, I've got a question for you about Dr. Graham's legacy. One of the things that we've talked about, Mike and I did, was Dr. Graham's legacy for pastors. Mm-hmm. We know that Dr. Graham was not a pastor, and as an evangelist preaching in crusades all across the country and all across the world in front of thousands and hundreds of thousands of people. We, as pastors, that does not necessarily resonate with us. We're not in a different place every Sunday preaching to hundreds of thousands of people. But what do you, in your opinion, what may be part of the legacy that Dr. Graham has left for pastors, maybe in the area of preaching? We've talked a lot about, Mike and I have, we both preach and both give gospel invitations at the end of every sermon we preach. We plead with people to come to Christ, and which is what Dr. Graham did. But what do you see, what is your opinion about Dr. Graham's legacy for pastors specifically?
Well, one, I think, and you just emphasized this, I think his clear understanding of the preaching act as not being a standalone entity within the corporate worship service, but that it really has a telos, and that telos is not just the glory of God, but it is the salvation of the lost. That, given the realities of American church life today, no pastor can presume that the entirety of his Sunday morning worship gathering are believers.
That's right.
And so I think, by Dr. Graham said famously once that he believed that the single greatest mission field in America today at that time was inside the four walls of the Sunday morning worship gathering. Mm-hmm. So I think the clarity of preaching the gospel, giving a time of response, clearly with both the logos, the ethos, and the pathos, to use that great formula from Aristotle in rhetoric, of preaching that helps people hear the gospel and provides an atmosphere where the spirit to that gospel. The invitation begins when the sermon begins, I think Dr. Graham would certainly say. And clearly, many pastors benefited from Dr. Graham's clear emphasis upon the come forward invitation, helping people to respond, the use of trained counselors. Many churches adopted in terms of helping people personally work through the issues in making a response to Christ. And then I would hope and pray that pastors, not just in preaching, but in their personal evangelism, were inspired by Dr. Graham. Dr. Graham, of course, Steps to Peace with God, hit that track, perhaps one of the most circulated gospel booklets of all time. His own emphasis upon holiness and personal integrity in ministry, the fact that there was never any whiff of scandal or lack of integrity in Dr. Graham's ministry that gave credibility to him in his authentic messaging. I think all these things were pastoral legacies that many pastors perhaps even unconsciously imbibed because the influence of Dr. Graham was so pervasive.
That's good. That's a good point. And I, you know, you mentioned that about his about the fact that he's not left any kind of legacy of any kind of stain on his ministry,
which we
have so much of right now in at least pastoral ministry. So many pastors have left the ministry or stepped down, who have had great ministry of preaching and pastoring, but have now, and that's, it's interesting that decades worth of ministry, and you don't have that in his life. That's something to really look at as a legacy, not just in his preaching, but in his ministry as a whole. I think that's fantastic.
Well, you can tell, and I read this somewhere, heard this somewhere recently, that it was a devotional life for Dr. Graham that he really said if he was going to leave one legacy to pastors, it would be make sure your devotional life is strong, walking with God. Of course, his marriage had to be strong too, to Ruth, and that, you know, protection for him in many ways in ministry, traveling, that kind of stuff, and I think is outstanding. You know, Adam, I've preached to larger crowds, not all the time, but I've never seen the kind of response to an invitation that Dr. Graham would have on a regular basis. And I told my church yesterday, as we were reflecting a little bit on Dr. Graham's legacy, that over the last 2 years, I've had the joy and privilege to lead about 25 people to Christ myself. And of those 25, four of them came forward in an invitation and prayed to receive Christ in the actual invitation. Actually, two of the four didn't come in the invitation. They came after the invitation when church was over, and yet we still prayed right there together. So I'm wondering if you can help us maybe think through, and this will balloon into a larger discussion of mass evangelism versus personal evangelism. But as pastors, I'm looking around at a generation of guys that I don't know if this is a doctrinal commitment or a pragmatic commitment, that the invitation time, the offer of the gospel in the invitation, has been lessened because, frankly, you don't see many people that come to Christ in an invitation time. Could you speak to that a little bit? Because I'm sure there are some guys who say, well, I don't believe in the invitation system. But then there are others that say, frankly, I just don't ever see anybody ever coming down, so kind of lost heart in giving the gospel call. What would you say that at?
Well, I think that you hit on several things that are important to note. I mean, one is I don't think we fully appreciate the breakdown of the Judeo-Christian worldview and culture that predominated much of American life, especially in the South, for many, many decades. to where there was already, if I can put it this way, kind of a God consciousness in the culture and an awareness of things. I joke that even the atheist in my hometown was a Christian atheist because the God he rejected was the God of the Bible.
Right.
And many, you know, kids who would grow up in a town who would be considered to be unchurched, still went to vacation Bible schools, still were in school systems that had the expressions of Christianity. There was just a cultural capital, as it were, that on the one hand was negative because it led many people to confuse being an American and being a Christian, and that's not helpful.
Right.
But I think it oftentimes did some sort of implicit pre-evangelism that helped people awareness, Christian themes, gospel issues, and the like. So the loss of that, the breakdown of that, I think is one component. Secondly, and you rightly mentioned, unfortunately, there have been errors and excesses and extremes with the invitation system, as it were, that have driven many pastors to just say, I don't want any part of that. We're not going to have anything to do with that. And they sort of throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Right.
I think also there are many pastors who can't feel competent or qualified or know how to give an effective invitation. I joke about, the two hardest parts of flying an airplane are takeoff and landing, right? Well, in some ways, I think many pastors approach the preaching act. The two hardest parts are the introduction and the conclusion leading into an invitation. How do you wrap it up? How do you segue from whatever the textual theme is into calling for gospel response where it doesn't come across as programmed or canned or inauthentic?
Right.
So I think all those things play into it. And then have been personally witnessing to people and sharing Christ. All those things, I think, contribute to the breakdown of why we're not seeing that kind of gospel responsiveness today.
You know, Dr. Graham was he was not considered by many to be a theologian, even though he had a theological foundation, no doubt. It's interesting, you know, this year we also saw the passing of Dr. R.C. Sproul, who would not share Dr. Graham's theological framework, probably. But he said something in a 2006 interview that I think probably has some truth to it. I'd like you to react to it. He was talking about how, you know, Dr. Graham's theology took serious the nature of sin and the power of the gospel and the call for people to respond to the desperate need of salvation in Christ and Christ alone. And he you know, championed those things. But he referred to something that Dr. Graham said in the preaching that he would give in the 50s and 60s especially, that he said 99% of what this is God's work, and the 1% is what you do. You have to make the response. Come up here and write your name in the Lamb's Book of Life. And Dr. Sproul would say, you know, I wouldn't use that kind of language. I don't think that's the right way to do it. But the danger, he says, and I quote Dr. Sproul, the danger that I worry about in evangelical culture today is that what has happened, through no design of Billy Graham, certainly, is that so many folks now understand the way of salvation as walking an aisle, raising a hand, praying the prayers, signing a card. That is, as responding to some particular evangelistic methodology. Matt and I were reacting to that a little bit this morning and just thinking about that's probably largely true in terms of, and Matt can speak to this better than I, the meshing together and the confusion of the way of salvation with the actual gospel itself and how we present the gospel and how that has been kind of muddy. What do you think about Dr. Sproul's comments and just Dr. Graham as a theologian in general throughout his ministry?
Well, first of all, I think Dr. Graham was certainly a theologian, even though he was unable to avail himself of the theological education that that others have. In fact, he said in various settings, if he could do some things over again, one of them would be he would have availed himself more in a theological education. Mm-hmm. I think that's why he was so passionate to support theological education. And again, we certainly here at Southern Seminary and in the Billy Graham School are the beneficiaries of that.
Amen.
I think also it's easy for people who try to mimic or imitate or to copy someone to focus only on the forms and not to recognize the foundation that underlies that. So you've got people who would only hear Dr. Graham's particular techniques, as it were, and would try to copy those without appreciating or appropriating the theological framework that came to the issue. I think also, again, there's some who just disagreed with Dr. Graham theologically or otherwise, for various incendiary reasons. I think there is a misunderstanding held by some that having a high theology of sovereignty means you can't have the same level of emotional persuasion to plead with people to be saved. And they resisted or rejected Dr. Graham's ministry because they believed that what he was doing was incompatible with a high theology of sovereignty. Well, I think the Apostle Paul, who had a higher theology of sovereignty and understood the gospel better than any of us, would disagree with that. When in 2 Corinthians 5, he makes very clear that we plead with people be reconciled to God. And so if there isn't that sense of passionate pleading for the salvation of souls, then I think your theology is deficient. And at the same time, I think there are people who perhaps unwittingly followed Dr. Graham's methodological approach, but allowed it to move into more manipulation or an overemphasis upon the decisional act itself. And I know Dr. Graham would have been very troubled and very burdened by this.
Adam, let me shift gears. I don't know that you can really talk about sort of the whole story about Dr. Graham without talking a little bit of politics. And we really want to go into politics here necessarily, but he has a great legacy of being able to sit down and counsel with. With numbers, I don't know the exact number now, presidents. How many? Seven? We tried to count them earlier.
I think all the way back to Truman. So however many Truman. That would, would be.
I couldn't remember. Seven, maybe seven or eight. Anyway, as we got to thinking about that and talking about it. I don't know that you can get the full story on Dr. Graham unless you talk a little bit about his legacy there in politics. There have been a lot of reaction to that, though, lately, especially since his death. A lot of people have reacted to his foray into politics early and his influence in politics as if that was the only thing that he did. Some people, that's the only thing that they see. There was a headline written on a NBC website that I just looked at a little while ago. It was written just yesterday, but a reverend who is a he is a Catholic priest. But he said, Billy Graham's legacy, this is the title or the headline, Billy Graham's legacy is the evangelical pursuit of politics instead of Jesus. And he says the limitations of relegating the gospel of Christ to little more than eternal fire insurance were on full display in Graham's lifetime. Wow. In the article, it talks a little bit about his interest in politics and his sitting down with presidents and how his gospel was more, we might, I don't know, some might say more political than it was evangelistic. I don't, that wouldn't be fair, I know, but as we talk about it, what do you see as Graham's legacy in politics, and maybe even with that, maybe the now that he's gone, his lack of influence in politics now. Now that he's gone, we won't have any more presidents that will sit down with a man like him. Now there are other spiritual counselors that our presidents have now. But with Billy Graham and his influence in politics, do you see that as a major part of his life? I know it's a part of his life that we see often in images and on TV with him sitting down with presidents and praying with presidents. You see that as how big of a part, I guess, of his ministry should we see that in his legacy?
Well, it certainly was a significant part of his ministry. I mean, I think that's why Grant Wacker in his book a few years ago used the label that's been used much in recent days, America's pastor, because he had that level of access to the highest corridors of the land. Again, had some interaction with every president, I believe, since Harry Truman, and was often sought out by them for spiritual counsel and perhaps other advice, you know, trying to discern how much of that was political, how much of that was theological, Was Graham used by these guys to pursue their crass political agendas? Did Graham have the opportunity to influence the spiritual lives of these men? Mm-hmm. You know, those are things historians can debate. And obviously none of us were in those rooms to be able to adjudicate that. Dr. Graham certainly came to the point where he recognized that there were limitations in what politics could do. That scene with his later recollections about his experiences with Richard Nixon. And then, of course, he didn't always choose to engage in politics. Famously, he did not choose to get behind the moral majority efforts of Jerry Falwell in 1979, 1980. Believing he had a higher purpose. I think a lot of times, again, Graham became kind of a Rorschach test for people to project whatever their images were about evangelicalism or conservative Christianity or what have you. And so Graham becomes the foil for that. So I've seen in recent days, as Dr. Graham has passed, and there's this kind of first wave of reactions, that a lot of what people choose to criticize is what they don't like. And so Billy Graham becomes the convenient target for that, of what they don't like. And I expect that from people given their own worldviews and perspectives with that. But I think Dr. Graham would be the first to say, look, his commitment was to be a gospel preacher. He was not a politician. He was not somebody that pursued political ends, except in what he would have believed that they would have served gospel ends, in terms of furthering the message that was always most important to him.
Well, even George W. Bush really credits the Lord changing his life through the ministry of Billy Graham, you know, especially helping him quit drinking and stuff like that. But his spiritual awakening really came through Billy Graham's influence. Yep. And, you know, I've heard Bill Clinton talk about, you know, how he felt abandoned by pretty much everybody, you know, when he was going through all the scandalous stuff he was going through, and yet there's Billy Graham, LBJ, same kind of thing, just a scandalous dude, but yet there's Billy Graham, no doubt sharing the gospel and offering prayer and stuff like that. So there's something to be said for a kind of legacy that is not tainted with, you know, not just personal scandal, but also political scandal. I mean, yeah, you're right, historians can sort it out. He didn't have a good experience with Truman, we know. And there are other things that he would have changed in terms of the political interactions. And yet, to have that level of access, I think you use that phraseology, Adam, is an incredible thing. And now, is there a void? You know, because we know, for example, Barack Obama had a group of people that counseled him on spiritual matters. We know that Donald Trump has a group of people, interdenominational group of people, as it were, to really grab his ear about some things, and in a public sense, we know a lot of those are taking advantage of that, for sure. You know, Adam, I wonder if we could talk for a minute about also mass evangelism, and, you know, was mass evangelism, obviously you're a professor of evangelism, you understand the landscape, the history, the mechanics of mass evangelism. And 1949, Billy Graham begins preaching, oftentimes open-air preaching in tents like you're talking about, and it would balloon into massive gatherings of people in stadiums. And then you've got that one meeting, I think it was in Korea, where there were like a million-some-odd people out there in the crowd listening to Billy Graham preach the gospel. And mass evangelism, of course, you have others like Luis Palau and others that are doing that, but is mass evangelism an effective model today? Because it seems like you're hearing less of crusades, hearing less of big gatherings of people to listen to a preacher. And was this just for such a time as this in human history that God raised up a Billy Graham to have this movement of mass evangelism with a few others doing the same thing? And now we've kind of moved past that, and God's doing something different in the landscape of evangelical Christianity.
Well, I think certainly the landscape's changed. I mean, Dr. Graham really was kind of the apex or the telos, perhaps, of a line of mass evangelists going back to people like D.L. Moody and R.A. Torrey, Billy Sunday. Mordecai Ham, of course, was the one, the human instrument through whom Billy Graham came to Christ. When Mordecai Ham preached a meeting there in North Carolina, Mordecai Ham, of course, who had ties to Louisville, Kentucky, as well. But there's no doubt that I think cultural conditions change of kind of much of American societal life. So the rise of, frankly, alternative forms of entertainment, where many people, they didn't have anything else to do in the community. The church or church life was the organizing principle of societal life in the community. That's radically changed. So I think that people have more ways to amuse themselves and to fill their time. And so they're less open to some of the ways that people used to do mass evangelism, tent crusades, stadium meetings. The natural lost person doesn't just drive by a meeting where there's a sign saying, you know, so-and-so in revival or a crusade this week, and automatically think, I think I want to go to that. Right. I want to go see that. That's a change from where things would have been. And so I do think that mass evangelism, it's not dead, but it certainly it is not going to have the societal impact. I mean, again, to your point, Dr. Graham filled out Madison Square Garden in New York City in 1957 for weeks, filled the place. I don't know of anyone, humanly speaking, who could do that apart from some great divine intervention.
Yeah, you. As we talk about this, I saw it was somebody, and I can't remember who it was now this past week, who said that Billy Graham may have been at least one of the greatest preachers, evangelists since the Apostle Paul. That may, how exactly how you'd flesh that out, I don't really know, but other than the numbers, but I do think that as you take into account all the other many other evangelists that you even mentioned a couple of those a second ago, but Dr. Graham had a huge impact. Even if you took away the political impact, even if you took that away, you think of thousands and hundreds of thousands, as you said, even millions of people who may have responded to the gospel through his preaching. It's an incredible legacy going back. I know for generations there will never be in generations to come anything like, in at least in my opinion, anything like Billy Graham. Yeah. I just don't see that ever. At least what he did and how he did it, I don't think that could ever happen again. Apart from divine intervention to do that again some way, but I don't see anybody on the landscape, on the horizon that would fill those shoes. That it just such an incredible legacy.
And I think to echo that point, it sort of, again, is what Dr. Graham himself said at one of his international congresses on evangelism, when looking out to the assemblage of evangelists and preachers and pastors from around the world, said, "You all are the next Billy Grahams." There's not a singularity there. It will be in the broad scope of all of us who've been impacted by Dr. Graham's ministry, recommitting ourselves afresh and anew to integrity, to urgency, to being people who are committed to doing everything we can that, to use the name of your podcast, that the gospel might reign and reign in the hearts and lives of people. I think that is really what will be his greatest legacy, is those he has raised up, those who've been impacted by him. It's all of us together fulfilling God's calling upon our lives to do everything we can to help people who don't know Christ to come to know him. That's, I think, his greatest legacy, and what he would say would be the next Billy Graham, as it were.
That's a great point.
Well, we're not going to see anybody with the kind of potency of ministry and Christ-saturated results, if you will, without a life of holiness and living circumspectly. And I think that, you know, that needs to be really clarified. I mean, people can throw, you know, grenades at people like Mike Pence, who says he's not going to be in a room alone with a woman that's not his wife, and national media jumps on him like, "You're weird and you're chauvinistic and you've got, you know, problems and stuff." And he's like, "No, I'm just committed to my wife." And in this culture, someone like Billy Graham's, you know, legacy of living circumspectly, I think, is fantastic. There's one other thing, Adam, I want to just tease out as an idea that I had regarding his legacy, and that is to say, Billy Graham surrounded himself with brothers who were committed to Christ as he was, and had deep, deep friendships in ministry and just personal friendship. People like George Beverly Shea and Cliff Barrows and to others, I'm sure. But these men, I mean, they were with him in pretty much the entirety of his legacy, watching God work through the ministry, participating in that, but also sharpening one another as friends. And I don't know if anybody's going to talk about this with respect to Billy Graham, but certainly the wisdom he had to surround himself with godly men, brothers, and friends that would encourage him in the gospel call, to me, I think is that's an untapped reservoir. And I'm thankful to God for you men. I mean, I would consider you guys blessings in my life to help me continue in ministry. Hopefully I'll do the same for you, and to pray for one another. But you have any thoughts on that in terms of his own friendships and just the legacy of the men that walked alongside of him as he saw God work through these many decades?
Well, I think to echo your point, Dr. Graham would have been the first to say that whatever success the Lord allowed him to experience in this life was not just due to him, but due to a tremendous team of people that God had put together to be with him. Some of those names are very familiar to us, people like George Beverly Shea and Cliff Barrows. Some of those names are perhaps less familiar to contemporary hearers, Grady Wilson, T.W. Wilson, John Akers, John Quartz, and others. But there's no question that Dr. Graham knew the power of relationships and knew that he needed people with him that he could hold himself accountable to, that together they shared the same mission and vision and convictions, and they were committed to the same task. And they had strengths that complemented one another in terms of, you know, Beverly Shea's singing, Cliff Barrows kind of the MC, mm-hmm. and then of course Dr. Graham as the preacher. And I do think that the power of relationships, you know, the power of team, the reality that, again, behind every successful individual, I believe you're going to find those who are working together to help make that happen. None of us arrives or achieves all these things on our own. And if we think somehow that we achieved it all on our own, we do not fully recognize the grace of God in bringing relationships to forge us and form us. And that's something that should frankly humble us at that point.
Well, I don't know that we'll ever see the end of the impact that he has had because of media. He is still preaching, and he will be preaching for generations to come through just something as simple as YouTube videos and those kind of things. I mean, his preaching will not die.
I was going to say, just hearing you say that, I pulled up Spotify on my laptop, and up popped Billy Graham In Memoriam, station that Spotify created for his preaching.
It's incredible.
Isn't that amazing?
I don't know that we'll ever finally see the end of that. I mean, there'll be people who will hear him, we can only assume, for generations to come, who would even be saved under his preaching, even years down the road. So it's incredible just to think about the impact that he's had on, not just on our American culture over the last several decades, but really around the world. And will be for maybe even generations to come. So this has been really incredible. I know there's a lot of things that are yet to be said about Dr. Graham. There's a lot of things. Adam, tell us a little bit about, and we were talking about this before we hit record on the podcast, some of the things that you've got going on right now, things, places that you'll be, memorials and those kind of things that are going on. Tell us a little bit about what's going on in these next last days.
Sure. The arrangements for Dr. Graham include his lying in state in the U.S. Capitol building in Washington, D.C., an exceptionally rare honor for somebody who was not a president or a politician. Mm-hmm. That will be taking place.
He's only the third person, I think, who would.
Third or fourth? Yes.
Wow.
It less than five.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
And of course, you know, in the 200 plus year history of our country, that's extraordinary. And then Friday morning, I believe there will be a private invitation only memorial service there on the grounds of the Billy Graham Library in Charlotte. I'm very blessed to have been invited to attend and making plans to attend that, to pay our respects to Dr. Graham. And
are you speaking at that, Adam, or just attending?
Not speaking. Okay. I think it's a very limited program. Mm-hmm. But I think every living president will be there, will try to be there.
Wow.
I can't imagine, again, the assemblage of folks who will be there from every realm of life. And again, to your point, I don't know that we'll see another funeral for a gospel preacher that will have this kind of of interest and attendance. I think the service will be live streamed and broadcast. And you mentioned about Spotify. I know Sirius XM satellite radio channel 145 is the Billy Graham channel right now, and they're playing nonstop messages from Dr. Graham. I mean, again, it's just to use the language of the writer of Hebrews, he being dead yet speaketh.
That's right.
And we are thankful for that. But really, it will be an extraordinary time. I had the privilege 5 years ago when I became the dean of the Billy Graham School to be invited to have a private audience with Dr. Graham in his home in Montreat. And that is a precious memory. It's the photo that has been on my social media pages ever since that time. And it's near me. If I can see it in sight line here in my office in Louisville. And to go and to be there for his memorial service, just a tremendous honor and something that look forward to celebrating a life well lived, a legacy so fruitful, and so privileged to be a part of that.
Well, that's great, man. We're very thankful that you've been able to be with us just for a little while and talk about this. There's so much more to be said about Dr. Graham. We have not said it all, but we wanted to sort of, I guess, maybe add to that a little bit and do our part to really honor the legacy of Dr. Graham. Adam, we want to finish with a segment that we normally call Did You Know? And I was just interested, knowing the things that you know about Dr. Graham, we wanted to ask you a question. I think Mike has got one too, a Did You Know? But tell us something maybe about Dr. Graham that most of us might not know. Common people might not have heard of yet. We hear about his preaching, you hear about his politics, those kind of things. But tell us something we might not know. Did you know something about Dr. Graham?
Well, did you know that Dr. Graham once gave a TED Talk? In 1998, I believe, he gave a TED Talk on technology. And you can find the video of that. I'm sure you'll drop it in the show notes for the Gospel Rain podcast on YouTube.
Yeah.
But of all of the various speaking forums and engagements Dr. Graham had over the decades, did you know he once did a TED Talk?
I did not know
no
that.
No idea. No, I never heard that before in my life.
And I'm really fascinated that they gave him the topic of technology.
I know, technology of all things.
That's
right.
Very interesting. Yeah, no, that's good. No, did you know? My did you know about Billy Graham is more personal in nature, so to speak. That is to say that when my grandfather was a new believer and had sensed a call into ministry, Dr. Billy Graham gave one of his first crusades in Los Angeles in 1949. And my grandfather was one of the counselors for the invitation during that series of meetings. And so he got introduced to Billy Graham and his ministry all the way back in 1949. And I had the privilege as a seminary student at Southern Seminary when Dr. Graham gave one of his last crusades. He had a few there after Louisville in 2001, but I had a chance to be a counselor for the invitation time as well in Louisville, and just kind of the bookend, so to speak, of Dr. Graham's public preaching ministry began with my grandfather, and I had a chance to see maybe the final stage of his ministry that way. So that's kind of a neat thing, did you
that
know,
cool.
In my own family, my own life, that I'll cherish as I think about Dr. Graham's legacy.
That's cool. You know, those iconic images and videos of people running to an altar.
Yeah.
You know, running,
yeah.
Running across a football field or something, coming out of the stadium to go. Those are just things that I remember seeing so much. I never saw that with my own eyes, but I've seen that in video of people running to make a decision, running to find a counselor to talk to. It's just it's an incredible image.
Yeah. For sure.
But anyway, Adam, thanks for being with us today. Stay on the phone with us. We wanted to just sort of thank our listeners for listening to Gospel Rain Podcast. Been a great great opportunity for us. Great time to be with Dr. Adam Greenway. Thankful for his service there in Louisville, and then also a time spent with us on the podcast just for a few minutes. But check us out on iTunes. You can find us at Gospel Rain. Go to the website, gospelrain.com. You can find us on Facebook and other places like that. You can share us with your friends. We'd ask you to continue to do that. And if you have questions and things that you want us to discuss or hopefully give some answers to on the podcast, all you have to do is submit those either on the website or on Facebook, Twitter, something like that. But we appreciate you listening, and we'll see you next time on the Gospel Rain Podcast.
Thank you for joining us for the Gospel Reign podcast. We hope you've been encouraged today, and we pray the gospel will reign in your life this week. Make sure to follow us on Facebook and Twitter, or check out our website at gospelreign.com.